The Babylon Project was our last best hope for peace. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for victory. The year is 2260. The place, Babylon 5.
Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 6, Chatsalon 5. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by a man who I thought was angry, trying to punish me. But he was afraid. You look at him, and you never would think he could be afraid. Welcome, John.
Hey.
It's tax season here at Chatsalon 5 Studios in sunny Poughkeepsie, New York, and we're struggling.
I'm in the bunker.
I love money, I love capitalism, and I love sci-fi television.
I'm in the bunker.
I'm in the bunker. Welcome to the bunker. This is recorded live from the bunker.
I can't. It's been weeks.
They haven't fed me. I'm getting a slow drip feed of TurboTax subscription.
Oh, yeah. That's all the sustenance I have. I have nothing else.
Nothing at all?
I have nothing else left.
I have this whack internet connection. I can't even download Black Mirror. If I'm living in a dystopia, how am I supposed to download my shows about dystopias? Dystopiae.
Preach it, girl, friend.
I'll preach it to you. I'll go to church. You gotta get going to church, you know?
You gotta get going to church.
Baby.
We go to church on this show.
The Church of Londo Malari. Let's get into it. This week on Chatsalon 5, we watched one episode of Babylon 5.
Great.
Season 3, episode 15, Interludes and Examinations. It was written by Jeffrey Michael Straczynski. It was directed by Jesus Trevino. It aired May 6th, 1996, and it takes place from August 3rd to August 5th of 2260. Magellan, if you can, please tell me what happened in Interludes and Examinations.
Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to do it because this is my med lab and I don't give a damn.
I don't give a goddamn. Good yelling this week on I&E. Let's call it I&E from now on. Just to shorten this excessively long title. Good title.
Damn.
I don't give a damn. I need my taxes.
Stamping while I open
that. Yes, yeah, I got you, man. You know it.
Okay.
They were both interludes and examinations of both things small and big.
This is an interlude of sorts.
Yeah, and it's an examine. And if we talk about it, then that's an examination.
Hey, double town. In this episode, as the shadows begin open warfare, Sheridan desperately seeks a way to encourage the other races to join forces. The only way he can find... Oh, that's a weird sentence. The only way he can find is to talk the Vorlons into joining, but doing so has a price. Meanwhile, Dr. Franklin's Stim's addiction comes to a head. Alan, what did you think of Interludes and Examinations? Are you more team Interludes or team Examinations?
I'm team Jacob. No, I'm team Vor, because there's a scene in this episode where they're looking at the computer screen and it just says Shaw versus Vor. I thought that was fantastic. That's my favorite NFL matchup. I loved this episode of television. I think this is an example of what Babylon 5 can do when its A and B plots connect really elegantly, and also a way to push the story forward while giving us time for character work. And as the title says, it's a bit of an interlude. I mean, it's like smack dab in the middle of the season, kind of. And it's an examination of what we've seen so far and where we're going next. So I loved it. What about you?
You know, we definitely did it on purpose that we made this episode happen on its own. It definitely wasn't just like a convenience thing that we're lucky that this is a really meaty episode. It's huge. It is. It's a major. It's major.
It's. But what did you think of it?
I thought it was major, honestly.
We major? You
know, I really thought it was actually pretty major. I loved it, man, because it does everything. This episode has everything that you would love about Babylon 5 in one episode. It's not a good episode to show someone if they know nothing about the show and expect them to understand what's going on.
Right.
But it's a great episode to use as an example of why we love Babylon 5, which is it's got people shouting at each other. It's got people just getting fucked over and falling victim to their own vices. It's got flashbacks to emphasize the intense continuity of the show. I loved it.
Yeah, it really, it juggles a lot of things and does that really well. I think I'm trying to pick like which like avenue to go down first, because there's the Vorlon stuff, there's the Franklin stuff, and there's the Londo stuff. We open on some really bad stock music with a bunch of shadow ships encroaching. And, you know, whenever we start an episode with an Ivanova audio log, you know that shit's about to get extremely real.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I love that even though all that stuff is happening, Morden coming on the ship is not presented as a big deal. He's just like, hey, guys, I'm here.
Yeah. Why like, is how did he get there?
I thought he wasn't allowed on anymore. Well, he sneaks on.
The Morden stuff, I think, is the sloppiest
in
this episode. Yeah, he just kind of is on the ship somehow. What was the very first thing he was doing?
I thought he was just walking like through security at the equivalent of the
airport.
There
was some snippet where he was like buying something from someone in like an under the girders area.
That was like halfway through when he was giving the person the little jewel money.
No, that was at the beginning.
Wasn't that this early?
There was something at the very beginning.
I can check.
Can you
while
pop
we
open the app and
yeah, I'll crack it open
what I'm
for
talking
you.
About.
I'll crack it open.
Because he's just kind of here, and he's doing a great job. I mean, this guy really was born to play Morden.
He's really born to the purple.
Yeah, he's born to the purple. He's so slimy and handsome, and it gets me every time.
He, in the beginning of the episode, he's in an underground thing also, and he like loads a guy's gun with bullets?
That's what it was. Bullets. It's a bullets thing. So yeah. He's trying to get people to like assassinate the like leaders of the ship. Is that what we're...
I think so. Well, I think he's so... We can examine Morden's sort of plan in this episode and the Shadow's plan, because it culminates in the climactic moment, which is the assassination of Ambassador Kosh, which is, oh my God, a big deal. I'm so glad that we did not know about this. This was like really exciting for me, because what I ended up doing was I didn't look up anything about this. I saw that happen. I freaked out. I had an appropriate reaction. Mm-hmm. And then I looked up like last episode Kosh appears in. And I know I like shouldn't do that, but I was like, maybe.
Yeah,
and it was this one.
We got a little criticism for doing that.
Well, yeah, which I understand. But like it was this one. And I was like, oh my God, Kosh doesn't come back.
Yeah.
At least not like as like Ivanova says, like, yeah, we didn't find, or Delenn or whatever, all of them are like, we didn't find a body. And then they're like, yeah, you're not going to. He doesn't have a body in that encounter suit.
That's it.
He has a form. Yeah. I love that. Just to jump ahead, when they're talking about this, they just have his helmet on the table. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's not like evidence or anything. We're just going to hang on to that.
It's going to be our centerpiece.
Exactly. We're going to use it at the dinner table. But the way they get there is Morden is like, yeah, like you said, hiring various tough people on Babylon 5 and giving them the tools to do this. And he basically double crosses Londo again. And in telling Londo that he's going to help him get revenge on Reefa, he's you know, pushing forward the war effort. Ruining the Centauri, basically guaranteeing that they're not going to recover from this imperialist streak anymore. And also, getting rid of the one person that was going to help out the Army of Light, finally. in one fell swoop. He does a lot on this ship in the little bit of time Morton he's does. Here.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do we want to start? I guess let's start with Londo. Right?
Yeah, when Ivanova is like going down the list of everything, she goes to Londo and she's like, and Londo is Londo. And it's just him looking at himself in a mirror. And he's like... Yeah.
And she has this line of like, you never know what he's going to do next. And in my head, I go, well, come on. I mean, he's good now.
Yeah, now Oof. He's fine.
Woof, how wrong I was.
He's so excited because Adira's coming back. And I can't imagine watching this episode when it aired and being like, who the fuck? Adira?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. So I follow JMS on Twitter. Uh-huh. And there was some person who tweeted out this thing about Game of Thrones, how it's like the first truly fully serial TV show or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, some nonsense. And then they were like tweeting at JMS like, well, Babylon 5 was, you know, mostly serialized, but like whatever, whatever. And his response was like, you can celebrate the present without pissing on the past. And he emphasized like, for the time, Babylon 5 was as there was as little like episodic episodes, as few of those as possible. And they had to fight like hell to make it that way.
Right.
Because you have to imagine.
He wrote a show that was like Game of Thrones. That was like every episode is building and moving and getting through arcs. And you want to put this on a network that people can watch it on. You have to have episodes that are accessible and like self-contained. You have to, or at least at the time.
Yeah.
I think he also talked somewhere about the idea. Oh, yeah. This is actually great. There was a listener sent us this really fantastic interview with him about like the 20th anniversary of Babylon 5. And he was there's a part in there where he talks about how at the time, if you told a network, like, I want a 5-season arc, this show is written with a 5-season arc, you would consistently get laughed out of studios.
Yeah.
Because nobody would ever guarantee you that. And now it's practically the opposite, where you tell them you have a setup for a show, and then they're like, okay, but what is, like, year 6 of this show going to look like?
Yeah, right.
Game of Thrones kind of, like, just threw a wrench in the idea of, like, having a show end. It's like, well, we can just keep going.
Right, it's just such a different landscape now. And so you have to imagine this episode coming on TV in, when did it air? 99 or whatever?
What did we say? 96.
96. And it's like, that's just, like when the flashbacks came up, I kept imagining, what if you accidentally were flipping through channels and you came across this episode?
Right.
And would you like, be hooked by this show, or would you be like, no thanks?
I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people who, like, you know, saw this episode and were like, oh, I want to figure this out, and would go back and find the other episodes. Because, I mean, we've watched plenty of shows in our youth,
yeah, like anime you do that you watch in 96. You buy VHS tapes?
Yeah, or you go on a forum and you ask people what the deal is and they explain it to you and you say, I'll eventually catch it when it's on some sort of DVD or something. But, you know, for now, I'm just watching the show
in
as 96, it airs.
In 96, though? They didn't have DVDs in 96?
Or, you know, VHSs.
That's just
they definitely released the show once it was over.
I just think it's so important to contextualize what this show is doing, because the entirety of this episode, none of it works unless you've been watching the show the whole time.
Yeah,
and this is like halfway through the season. This isn't the season finale. This isn't the season premiere. This is like halfway through the season.
Yeah,
this is a big deal.
When Ivanova says Londo's being Londo, that line doesn't make it literally. And you're just like, okay, I get it. So he's like vain. And it's like, no, it's not just that he's vain. It's that he has like a corrupted view of himself. That's not.
Yeah, it's that he's about to fuck everything up. Which if you know the show, you know that
that's Londo being Londo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Born to the Purple was season 1, episode 3. Like it's and that was 2 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
So you're just like, ooh, Adira? And that's only a big deal because like you like and they show the flashbacks like. She's the only person who made Londo feel happy. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything is more damning of Londo than the moment when he's like, Veer, this is amazing. I haven't felt happy in so long. I'm so excited. And I'm like, no, Londo, you can't do that. You can't say I'm finally happy. That never goes well for literally anyone. That's illegal.
Yeah, don't you know that if you say you're happy, you're going to get destroyed?
Exactly. That's like dramatic television 101.
Oh my God.
And once it starts popping off, it really pops off. Like, he's buying all this stuff. He's excited for Adira to come back. He's like having Veer buy her sexy lingerie, and the stupid guy's like, everyone loves garters. Mm-hmm. Nonsense. Morden immediately like finds that guy and finds all the information he needs to know. And, you know, he speaks to Londo early on. He tries talking to Veer, and then Veer is like, Morden asks Veer, like, can I help you with anything? And, I think he's like,
I love this scene.
Yeah.
Veer's like, you can die.
Other than die?
Yeah.
That would be really great if you did that.
Ugh.
And he goes to Londo and says, like, hey, so, like, you're telling Rifa to not work with me anymore? And he's like, yeah, he sucks, dude. You suck. I'm not working with you anymore. We promise. Like, I told you, I don't want to be part of this anymore. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay. All right. And they're under this, like, bright red light. It's very, like, Shakespearean. And he's like,
I had some questions about, it seems like Morden is making that happen. Like he
the
can,
lights?
Yeah, like he can hack into the station somehow and control things like that. This episode made me unclear about the extent to which Morden is capable of doing things.
Or at least what the shadows that are hanging out with him are capable of doing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
I still stand by my idea that he's just a guy.
Right, and I've liked it that way, but this episode kind of gave him a almost super villainous quality,
mm-hmm,
that took me a minute to reconcile.
Yeah, it's a little strange, and then I think Londo's like, there's nothing you can do to me, Mr. Morden, that has not already been done.
Oh boy, Londo, don't you know?
Things you can't say!
Come on, bud!
Immediately we hear like the squeak. It's actually funny that the thing that lets you know that a shadow is in the room is that it goes like
it's a cute little noise.
You're like, oh, there it is. And that's the signal that, like, yep, someone's about to get destroyed. And then, yeah, I mean, just talking about the Londo plot, like, there's the lingerie stuff, the garter stuff, anything I can do to help short of dying, and then I'm trying to just find the part. Yeah, it tells Veer I'm finally happy. Guarantee Adir is going to be murdered by shadows. Literally the next scene, they walk down a hallway and they're like, oh, it's a body. And I'm like, stop, Londo, don't look at it. And he's like, hey, doctor, whatever, who is that? And she's like, oh, it's this Adir lady. And he's like, nah, he just cracks. I almost cried at this part. It's so sad. And you know what's happening, too. That's why it was impressive that I felt emotionally invested.
Right, you know it's going to happen the whole episode. As soon as you see a flashback of her, you're like, oh, okay. So we're not going to see her. She's just going to be dead.
Right. And he's not sure what it is at first. And then we get this long flashback where he's like completely on the wrong train of thought. And he's like, oh, so Rifa poisoned her because I tried to poison Rifa, and he's jealous and he wants my power. So he did it. And it's like, and then he's like, check for poison. And then Morden hands the man that Londo spoke to some money, and he whispers some crap in his ear, mm-hmm, and he goes off to do Kosh things. But Londo later talks to him and just kind of like feeds directly into that theory that, mm-hmm, Rifa did it.
Mm-hmm.
And Londo eats it up and is like, you know, he wants my power. Everyone around me dies, Mr. Morden, and this time I want to decide who gets to die instead of letting it just happen. Let the rest of the galaxy burn, Mr. Morden. I don't care anymore. I want you to kill Rifa and protect the Centauri. Mm. Nothing else matters. And it's like, oh, God. And then the cherry is, as Morden is like, I am, as always, in your service, Londo. Mr. Mallari.
I mean, this is the most interesting thing to happen, but I don't necessarily buy it entirely.
Which part of it?
The part where Londo is like, okay, so now I have to work with Morden again.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he thinks Rifa did it, wouldn't he just get someone to kill Rifa like he was going to?
Why would you ever trust Morden again? I had that same thought.
Yeah,
I was like,
I just don't really, I don't know about that. I just don't buy that.
But what option does he have? Like, he wants to get revenge on Rifa.
He murders
and this
Rifa with his little poison plan that he already said.
Just finish the job, dude.
I think it's partly that he's blinded by revenge and tragedy right now, that he's like, I'll take literally the first opportunity. Yeah. And like I was saying, Morden feeds into that like known anxiety that he's the cause of, and says like, yeah, Rifa told me like he's mad at you and he's gunning for you and all this stuff. So like, you know, maybe it was him, which is where that makes a little bit of sense. But I still did feel like, oh man, we're really doing this again, because the Kosh stuff felt like a really fresh new conflict that like changes the state of the world.
Yeah, definitely.
But the Londo stuff just basically like rewound his character arc, yeah, and put him exactly where he was. Us,
yeah.
And it's like, I know he's gonna feel bad. He's gonna realize it way too late. He's gonna hurt a lot of people, and then he's gonna try to be forgiven again. Londo's a cyclical arc.
That's a good point. Maybe that's just how it's gonna go for a while.
Yeah, right. Maybe the cyclical tragedy of Londo is the point. Is that he just keeps thinking things are gonna like go well, and
never,
they don't.
He can never escape that cycle.
Mm-hmm. You're saying. Eternally owned, exactly. So he's gonna be unsurprisingly like gunning for Rifa now, which stinks.
Yeah, it's fine. I just don't. Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that he's like, okay, Morden, you're my best friend. It just doesn't seem quite.
Right. Literally like made this. You made a huge deal about like, this is the last time. I need to distance myself from you. And then he's like, Morden, it's like texting your ex. Like, don't.
Okay, that's a good comparison.
Just don't do. You know you shouldn't. Of course you know you shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you want to talk about the Franklin stuff or the Kosh stuff first?
Let's talk about the Franklin stuff.
So, yeah, I think the like connecting theme of this episode is just people trying to get through to other people, because like you know, Sheridan is trying to get through to all of the non-aligned races, and obviously Kosh is trying to get through to Sheridan, and Londo is trying to get through to his soul, and Garibaldi is trying to get through to Franklin. He realizes that the Stim's addiction is becoming a problem. Yeah. He doesn't want to stay passively by anymore and let his friend hurt himself and other people on the ship. We get this scene that fully confirms that this is a problem that needs to be addressed, where Franklin's in the med lab just having a bad day. He's screaming at people. The doctor's telling him, you know, you can't make assumptions based on this data. We shouldn't diagnose based on this. This is unsafe. I don't agree with you. He's just extremely angry at her. He screams.
Yeah.
Richard, what's the actor's name? Richard Biggs actually sells the screaming really well. I always talk about like yelling acting can be really hit or miss.
Yeah, he's especially hit or miss, I feel like. But this time he was pretty good.
Right, because it feels like it's coming from such a real place. It's not like a sudden burst. It's just like exhausting.
It
like,
builds throughout the scene, which helps.
Right, by the time he's pointing fingers and screaming, he's like, you know, for you, doctor, I told you to do this thing. For you, nurse, I told you not to disagree with me. For Garibaldi, I told you to shut the fuck up. And it's just like him building and building and yelling at people. And they also, like, the actors sell the aftermath very well, because if you've ever been in the room with somebody who has a yelling meltdown like that, the default like reaction is just silence. And there's a good like 4 or 5 seconds where everyone's like, I'm just gonna kind of work. And then, Garibaldi's the one who's like, all right, well, don't ever, he basically just says like, don't ever say I didn't try to help you.
Yeah.
So he goes into Franklin's quarters in this next part. This part's supposed to be very serious, but Franklin's shirtless.
And he's got an interesting body. You had the perfect comparison photo.
Yeah, there's that big Kylo Ren meme from like when he's in episode 8 and he takes his shirt off and people just like stretched out the body to make him look completely wide. That is actually what Franklin looks like here. He's got big, big pancake nipples. He's not fat and he's not muscular. He just has like a very flat body. And it's kind of wide, and he's just like Garibaldi. Exactly.
Yeah.
Garibaldi, the concerned friend, tells Franklin he can't keep working like this, and he's like, "Don't make me use my job against you." And Franklin is like, "You don't get to decide my life. I know all this stuff." The way Franklin defends himself in these scenes is mostly very good and very like believable.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the part later when they're in the med lab, about to look at the drug data.
Yeah.
I take a little bit of umbrage with the part where Franklin is like, there is a line where if you cross it, you're addicted. And if you don't cross it, you're not addicted. And I'm under the line. And it's like, that's not...
Yeah, that seems kind of odd.
That isn't how addiction works, guys. You don't, like, take a certain amount of drugs in your system and then you are officially, capital A, addicted. It just seems really wrong-handed of him. And I know he is wrong in that scene and he's, like, you know, making up science, but...
Yeah, I understand the logic of the scene of, like, Franklin... The only thing that's going to convince Franklin is the numbers and the medicine. But then it seems like kind of a hand wave to be like, ah, and the numbers show I'm addicted.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't feel like he's actually accepting that he has a problem.
At least in this point, exactly. And you're like, this is not going to go well for him. Garibaldi takes the higher ground and doesn't actually look at his health data. He's like, yeah, this seems...
character moment for Garibaldi.
Totally. He's like literally about to open and then he says, no, never mind. And Franklin walks right in there because he realizes that he could lose his whole career if Garibaldi gets this data. There's also a scene we missed where the way Garibaldi knows to go here is he talks to Dr. Hobbs, who's like Franklin's like assistant doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really funny that she's like, man, I thought we were a paperless society, but every time I do, there's like 10 more forms to fill out. And I'm like, it's 2260. Why aren't we paperless yet? Obviously, that's the joke, but I just was like, it bummed me out.
That's funny.
And then, yeah, Franklin is like right in the corner during that whole scene, conveniently. Mm-hmm. So he's ready to intercept Garibaldi. That seems like it's on pause for a while. And then, yeah, right towards the end of the episode, after all this stuff where we know that, like, the med lab is needed more than ever, Franklin confides in Sheridan, actually,
mm-hmm.
that he has a problem. He admits it. He says, I have a problem. I need help. The only way for... And this is the part that really broke me. And maybe it's just me, but he says, like, I haven't had time to listen to music anymore. I haven't had time to, like, yeah, be to, like, with my thoughts. Vid. Yeah, to watch, like, YouTube, watch, like, K-pop videos on YouTube.
Yeah. Just,
that's haven't had stuff. Time to watch Vine compilations. Like, there's something I can relate as somebody who has spent the last 4 months, like, basically head down between work and podcasting, like, just doing the stuff that I like that is, you know, my week to week routine.
Sure.
And I've been getting away from that, but it's hard after a while to be like, oh shit, I haven't, like, just sat for a while.
Right.
Because work is all I have. And so he resigns from chief of staff in MedLab in this scene.
What do you think of this move?
It's weird because this is a time, like I said, this is a time when they really, really need good doctors.
Yeah.
They're in a war and they need good doctors. But I think it's one of those things where he understands that, like, you know, the reason he was beginning all of this STEM stuff was he felt like he was the only one who could keep MedLab afloat. They have competent doctors that aren't him. They can manage without him for a little while, I think.
Yeah.
And he will be better off if he takes some time to himself and comes back, like, refreshed and ready and understanding himself better. But then, like, what do we do with Franklin's character anymore? Is he just going to be, like, doing stuff with Marcus, like, investigation stuff? Because he's not going to be doing doctor stuff.
Right. Like, what's his reason for being in the show?
Right. Because as a person, like, separate from it being a TV show, yeah, he can finally be himself. He can get help and get rehabilitation. But, like, on the show, we're not going to see a lot of that. We need him to have plot.
Mm-hmm.
Or the show needs him to have plot significance. So I guess that means he has more time to do, like, yeah, like, cop stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I can't imagine he's going to be away from MedLab for very long.
Yeah, exactly. They need to have a doctor that, like, that character type is important.
Yeah, I think he's going to have maybe an episode where he's like, no, I can't. I can't help. I'm trying to recover. And they're like, we need you. And then he jumps in and helps.
And he's like, give me the gloves. And then, like, gets a scalpel and opens something up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think this is really sold well. The acting in all of this is fantastic and just... yeah, really curious where Franklin goes because I have a feeling he's on the show for the long haul. So, like,
yeah, I can't imagine he wouldn't be.
He's not gonna at least, like, stick around and do things.
Yeah.
But it's a mystery. And then so the final big, like, tier of the episode is the whole thing with Kosh, which I know you said while texting me that you really enjoyed and were very invested in.
Mm-hmm.
Sheridan, like the rest of us, is stressed about the war, and it keeps getting all these notices that different, like, non-allied planets are being attacked by the Shadows. He tries to get them all to ally with the Army of Light. They kind of, the two races that he talks to seem kind of childish in this scene, if you ask me, where one of them is like, we won't help you if they don't help you. And then the other one is like, we won't help you because the Shadows seem like they're okay. And he's like, fuck. Like, prove to me that you're better than the Shadows and that I should side with you. Because if I ally with them, they won't kill us. You guys won't kill us if we don't ally with you. And it's like, no, but they're lying to you. And one of them has a cool gas mask. That was, I thought, a nice touch. Just like the gas mask race.
Yeah, that was cute.
And then, so he's just really frustrated. And he's like, we need a win. I have military experience. I was assigned to this as a military general or like a leader. And so the way I know for us to make progress here is to get a win on our side.
Right.
Like, destroy a Shadow ship and have it be public and everyone see it and make a big deal out of it.
So let's go get our friend Kosh, who's supposed to be, like, fighting this war with us, to fight this war with us.
But he's just been binging Netflix for, like, the last month, so nobody's heard from him.
Sorry, I was going through my own stuff.
I promise I'll pay you back. Literally, I had so much fun with all these Kosh scenes because he just is that impression that we do. Sheridan comes up to him and is like, Kosh, we need your help. And he's like,
no.
And this is where I got things going on. Sheridan cracks here. He completely cracks. He's like, you can't just do that.
Yeah.
Because you're telling me that I got to be a leader and I need to get all the people together and I have to win the war and it's an essential war and you are part of it and the Vorlons are part of it and you won't even give me anything other than cryptic bullshit. Like, he's literally saying, like, your character never does anything for the show other than serves as, like, the Gandalf, basically.
Right.
And do something.
We don't really believe that you're, like, a cool guy.
Yeah. You could just be a dude.
Cool guy.
This is also, or before this, when Delenn is talking to him and she's stressed out, he's like, every day people start talking more and more like Kosh. Like, he knows the Kosh shtick now. He's just sick of it. I imagine this is in some way a version of, like, a fan response to people being like, when's Kosh gonna do something? Where's he been all season?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a check-in and, like, what have you been doing all season? And he's like you said, I got shit going on. Kosh, like, attacks him back because he says, like, impotent, you're not listening to me. I will be ready to, I will fight when it's the right time. You don't know when it's the right time. And Sheridan's like, I will not leave until I'm dead, because if I leave and you don't help us, then we die. And if you kill me, then I die. So I don't care. You have to help us. I'm not letting this scene end in a short amount of time. So he just dogs Kosh down this hallway. Kosh starts, like, blasting him with mind lasers. It's very intense. It honestly seemed like he might. I mean, I know he's not going to kill Sheridan,
but he's, like, hurting him in a way that's scary.
Right. He's just being thrown against the wall like it's nothing.
And it makes you think for a minute, like, maybe Kosh is a bad guy, or he's, like, a manipulative dude, or there's something else going on with this guy.
They disassemble Kosh's character here. It's the classic, like, actually, the wise wizard isn't, like, he's the Merlin type. That's another thing they mention in one of the interviews I was reading, where it's like, yeah, he was designed to be Merlin, where it's like, why do you keep giving us cryptic info and not helping us? Why don't you just go to Mordor yourself, kind of thing?
Right.
And he's like, I can't, it doesn't work like that. And then he basically tells Sheridan, like, you know, this, you doing this is like you making a line in the sand, and things are going to end. And he says, you do not understand, but you will. Sheridan's like, I don't care. It's about time you started pulling your own weight around here. And then he walks out. And he's like, bye, Kosh. I'm sick of you. You're garbage.
So Kosh helps. Things seem fine. The Vorlons have cool lasers and ships, and they destroy the Shadows.
That was awesome. Everyone's cheering for them. Shaw versus Vor. It's like good CG for once.
Cut two. Kosh's room. Somebody has a key. Oh, I thought it at first was Sheridan coming to say hello.
Right, because Sheridan's like, I should thank him. I should go right now and thank him.
Yeah.
Ivanova's like, no, you should get some sleep. Somebody else goes into Kasha's room, and then we see, like, smoke come up. Mm-hmm. And Sheridan's asleep. He has a dream, and he sees his dad. Again, always got to examine dreams on Babylon 5. I initially thought this was the shadows communicating with Sheridan. Do you know what? Because you know why? Like, I think...
Oh, the dad part?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because basically the dad just says, like, some very cryptic stuff, and then is like, don't worry about me, I'm going to be okay. Like, I'm going to move on, all right.
Yeah.
I think the actual truth is it's just Kosh telling him, like, going through him and being like, don't worry, this is a current death, but it's going to be a spiritual death. I'm fine, like, in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was the shadows being like, don't, like, lying to him and being like, don't worry, nothing's bad. Don't wake up, Sheridan.
Yeah.
And then I thought he, like, broke through it. But no, he breaks through it. He goes, oh my God, we got to get to Kosh. And he's way too late. And we just see our man, our booger man himself, his toilet booger helmet is on the floor.
Oh, our friend.
Killed by the shadows. He was killed by the shadows. They walk in with Morden.
That's sad.
It's very sad. And then not only is it sad, but, like, the ship doesn't even have a character. But the show, like, gives it a character in this moment. Because they all, like I said, are looking over the helmet of Kosh. And Delenn is like, yeah, so the ship, like, has programming to take Kosh into it. And it'll send him into the Epsilon system where he deserves to fade, to die, to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
It fulfilled its final duty. And it's like, is the ship a dog? Is the ship, like, a really friendly dog? That's kind of how they write that. And yeah, our boy's dead. He's just gone.
Damn.
Deeply sad.
Super sad.
I like the permanence of it. I like the build-up. And like I said, the way that the Londo stuff and the Kosh stuff all kind of clicks together. And you mentioned that all of this Kosh stuff kind of makes us reconsider the Vorlons. And I think it's, again, important to remember that, like, that great scene at the end of season 2 where they see, everyone sees the angels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you really want to galaxy brain it, the Vorlons have interfered with history in different races since the beginning of time. I think the Vorlons told people that angels are holy figures. Mm-hmm. Like, the reason they think of angels is because the Vorlons put that idea into their head to ease them into it when they finally do see Vorlons and that they like them in the future. And that's kind of fucked up. That's like a dark thing.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Like, when you see us, we're going to be what you think of as literally, like, the pinnacle of your race.
Yeah.
And you're going to love us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, arguably worse than... Because, like, the shadows are all about, like, direct present conflict and, like, long-term plans. But then the Vorlons are like, no, we seeded our plans a while ago. Now we're just kind of passively waiting.
Right. And what is revealed here is that the Vorlons are not in any way trying to, like, save the universe.
No.
They're kind of just trying to keep themselves safe.
Right. They have the war that they fight and they know how to fight it, but they use everyone else. Like, it really is the Vorlons and the Shadows playing chess with the rest of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Over the course of history. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, them helping out. It's like, you guys are all pawns.
And it's like, I guess we'd rather be pawns of the Vorlons, I suppose.
But... Right, at least for now, you know. And I was curious, once we set up the Shadows as a villain, like, are they going to take the route of, like, give the Shadows a personality and a reason that their motives make sense? Or are they going to make the Vorlons have less, like, positive aspects and make them villainous?
Mm.
And it seems like they've leaned into the latter, at least so far.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think this show's, like, grand arc has to, at some point, give us some reason why the Shadows are the way they are. That doesn't just seem like they are evil. They are the pinnacle and description of evil.
Right. Well, I guess we'll learn more about the history of the Vorlons and the Shadows to see where that comes from.
That seems like some next season stuff, for sure.
Yeah.
Because next season, I think, was supposed to be their last season, and then they kind of, like, did an epilogue season. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, like, the grand scheme of the show, I want to read a quote from that JMS interview that I mentioned earlier. Which I linked on Twitter if people want to find it, but basically JMS is talking about how he considered Babylon 5 to be a hopeful show. And the interview asks him, like, how did you do that? And how was that a response to Star Trek, the way that, you know, other sci-fi shows at the time are responses to Star Trek? And he has this quote here. The Star Trek universe seemed to say that for us to go into the stars, we have to leave behind important parts of ourselves, the good and the bad. Our vices, our avarice, our commercialism, but also our faith and our beautiful fractures. And I thought, no, we will still carry that with us. Hmm. When settlers came to the Americas from Europe, they didn't leave behind their culture. They brought it with them. It gave them continuity in a new world. And so it was important for us to show that continuity. We see religion, alcoholism, drug abuse, all of the things that ennoble or plague us now carried into the future. Mm-hmm. You bring the beauty as well. And then in the show, Sinclair says that we had to go to the stars or we would lose Shakespeare, Monroe, Buddy Holly, and Lao Tzu. There's as much beauty in the human race as well as our least noble parts. And I wanted to show us taking that with us when we go into the stars. So this show centering itself around like human failure and like the flaws of ourselves mm-hmm. and the way that we make problems for ourselves is hopeful. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
You don't lose that in going into space.
I love that. That's the kind of sci-fi I want to watch. I don't want to watch handsome people who are good.
Right.
I want to watch people who are fucked up.
Yeah, because we are. Everyone is. You know, sure. We're just like fundamentally cosmically messed up. And it's mm-hmm. nice to get characters that do that and have to navigate that because
yeah.
you see yourself in them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see if I have any good stray notes. I mentioned most of the stuff that I wanted to talk about. But again, very, very dense episode. I wrote here that Franklin was being a fuckboy mm-hmm. when he was screaming at people. I learned that the term born to the purple refers to like when you are noble by lineage. It's actually a known term. Because I was reading about the other episode again. Mm-hmm. the Kylo Ren body, obviously. The tragedy of all this. People talking like Kosh. The whole X means you're not addicted stuff, short of dying, garters. These were all hit. Again, I really liked that Vorlon Shadow fight. That was like one of the best CG things they've done in the show so far. It's just very like it didn't last too long. It was like looked pretty good. The quality was good. Mm-hmm. It's fun to see shadow ships blow up.
Yeah.
Not enough of Vonova in this episode was actually something I noted. I need more.
Yeah, there wasn't much. Just her talking at the beginning and then kind of making faces when the Vorlons won.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it.
But that's pretty much what I Gizzity got and what we got for this discussion. So, again, we're just watching this one this week, and then next week we're going to get back to a two-parter. Magellan, do you want to tell people what those episodes are for next week on Chats on Fire?
I certainly will. We're watching Season 3, Episodes 16 and 17, which are the two parts of War Without End. All right. Part 1. Oh, you're going to like this.
Should I not? Do you want to say it, Action?
I don't want you to hear this.
Okay.
I don't want you to hear either of these.
Okay. Send me a Sky message when you are done?
Yep.
Okay, great.
War Without End, Part 1. Sinclair returns to accompany Sheridan on a life-threatening mission involving Babylon 4. And then part 2, Sheridan moves through time, experiencing his future. It's going to be crazy. Okay, let's tell Alan to come back. Come back.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Hey, I'm back. I figure it's a two-part. It's probably a big one, so I'm avoiding that. Mm-hmm. Cool. That'll be fun. Magellan, that's still regular schedule, right? Are we not? I don't know. We'll figure that out. How we're releasing things.
What do you mean?
Don't we have to take a break soon for you to go on a trip?
No.
Okay. No, we're good. Awesome. Extremely good. That brings us to the end of our discussion. Let's take it to the plug zone. You can email us questions, comments, theories at chatspod@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us and follow us at chatspod on Twitter. You can rate us on your podcast platform of choice. I like to think we're a 5-star podcast. What do you think? Tell us. Rate us.
Come on.
If you'd like to support us financially, which we really do encourage you to do, patreon.com/chatspod is your destination of choice. We want to thank all of our current patrons and encourage you to back us at either, you know, two or five or however much you want every month. Because at two a month, you'll get a monthly commentary where we watch films with you. We just put out our Kung Pao commentary, and we're going to do Shrek next, which is very exciting.
We're doing fun stuff, folks.
OG ass Shrek, yeah.
We are doing fun stuff.
We're living the dream. And then at $5 a month, you can listen to Chats Nights, which is kind of our like pre-show hangout, talking about whatever. We did a tax episode before this. No, that doesn't sound exciting, but I swear.
It was good.
We just recently had to double release episodes because I like missed a week. Oopsie. So you can hear us talk about our pre-PAX plans and then our post-PAX board game discussion and then some other stuff. There's a lot of episodes. There's like 20 episodes now. It's great. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. And Magellan, what is your chatsum for this week?
My chatsum is a segment of a podcast episode. So getting, you know, real zoomed in here. A friend of mine told me about a recent This American Life episode. I believe it's episode 672 called No Fair. And it starts with like a 12-minute story about a preschool where in the classroom they have what's called a tattle phone. And it's a phone that the preschoolers, when they feel that something unfair has happened, they pick up the phone and they tell the phone. And it was put in the classroom as a way to like free up the teacher's time. Because preschoolers will always be like, Alan hit me. Or like, Alan farted. Or, you know, stuff like that.
These things happen.
And so they were able to get permission to take recordings of the preschoolers talking into the tattle phone. And then interviewed some of the preschoolers, and it's just really cute and fun. So,
yep, it's called No Fair.
Yes,
fantastic. I do enjoy This American Life. I was just talking to someone recently about a guy who walked across the country and experienced a lot of racism trying to like sleep in people's homes. It's an old one, but it's an oldie but a goodie. I haven't listened anymore because I don't have time. But that one sounds really good. My chatsum for this week is a performance by Magellan and I's favorite K-pop group, Blackpink. They were recently at Coachella, which is this week. I feel like it's a week long, right?
Yeah, that sounds
It's like plausible. Several days. The reason I specifically recommend their Coachella performance is because, A, it's beautiful. It's like they're doing a lot of their best songs. But it's also just a good primer for like why K-pop is exciting because like, you start by watching that and you're like, okay, so like the outfits are cool. Like the songs are kind of catchy and I don't understand it, but like I'm excited. And then you realize that like this is their first like, you know, they were in New York for Colbert and Good Morning America a couple months ago. But this is like their first like big concert in the States. And like this shit's coming global, you know? It's easy and it has been easy in the past decade or so to think of like, K-pop as the thing your weird friend is into that is like never gonna affect you in the present, but like a lot of American producers produce K-pop these days, and B, they're coming.
We're experiencing an invasion.
I was about to say it is like very reminiscent of the exactly it's very reminiscent of that, of like they're coming here now. BTS was on Saturday Night Live like
last night,
you know. So it's all happening. That one's all on YouTube if you want to watch that. It's just very, it's a very good performance. I like the choreography for Don't Know What to Do. It's like an okay song on the album, but the choreo is like very good.
That's cool.
So peep that if you get a chance. Great. And that is going to do it for this episode of Chatsalon 5. Peace.